Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. I walked away from the edge of the cliff today, Nick. I'm doing a lot better.
Yeah.
My Padres emotions than I was a few hours ago, I tell you.
A Tatis grand slam and a little Manny solo shot to punctuate it. That's all I needed too. I mean, it was necessary. It was getting dark there for a while.
It was. And especially this game today was, we got that Fam leadoff homer, and then it was like right back to the Padres, you know, over the past couple weeks as normal. And I was like, oh gosh, here we go.
Yeah. We're also joined by Dallas McLaughlin.
So I told her that's the third time I got COVID. Oh, hey, sorry, guys. I was just getting off a phone call. Yeah, wrong podcast. Sorry. I was doing
a new sketch there, Dallas.
I was doing an Everything's Fine Patreon only episode. Yeah, what's up, Nick? Seriously, Travis hit the nail on the head there, Nick McCann. I was literally, yesterday was a dark day when it came to Padres baseball. And thank God they won today. If they didn't win today, honestly, like when they got to 1-0 and then they tied it up, or they didn't tie it up, Peraza, I think it was Peraza, hit the two-run home run
yeah,
to go on top. I literally was like, well, we lost. Because like the one thing we haven't been able to do in the past week, it seems, or almost 2 weeks, it seems, is that we haven't been able to come from behind. So I was down. I turned off the game. And then I slowly started creeping back, and it was, thank God. I mean, just thank God. The two guys that are supposed to get us out of this funk got us out of this funk, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. Well, and not to keep going on this, but one thing that changed, what inning was it in the sixth with the grand slam? Seventh? I don't remember the inning, but the batters before, started working the count for the first time in like months. That it seemed like they were actually taking pitches, and they got two walks or what led to the grand slam, if I'm not mistaken. So it was good to see my old Padres come back. Whatever it is.
We're new Padres this year. But it's the same old feeling. We're in third place, y'all. And
come on, what's up with the Giants,
like,
man?
Home. And we were excited about this team for a long time. We were kind of distancing ourselves from focusing on the prospects and looking at the minor league system, but we're back in third place. So we decided to bring back our old friend, David J from Mad Friars. What's up,
hey,
David?
Woo-hoo! Hey, things look crappy. Let's talk to David. I like that. That's sort of how my family treats it too. So yeah,
You're our optimist oracle. That's what we like to refer you as.
So yeah, how are you guys?
I mean, we're in third place, you know. We've been a third place podcast for a while, and now it's all coming together. But you know, before we get into like the Padres system, I mean, how have you been enjoying the 2021 Padres, you know, the last 2 weeks or so, notwithstanding? But you know, how's it been? You know, we've joked about this before. You are a person who likes Major League Baseball too, and
Both parts of that sentence are correct. I am a person and I do like Major League Baseball. Yeah. It's better to have a winning team around and watch good baseball than it is to watch, you know, take a year anytime during my kid's lifetime. Right. Right. So it's better this way. Right. Yeah. It's been a rough couple of weeks, but they're still the same club. They've still got the same, the same pieces that make them one of the top teams in the big leagues, and they will continue to be. And you know, it's a lot easier to see how they finish with a record, you know, with a winning percentage a little bit higher than what the Giants are, you know, doing with smoke and mirrors and guys who, you know, are almost my age, which is obscene. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really confused about what the Giants are doing, and it scares me that it hasn't stopped yet.
Yeah.
And it might not, and then I'm going to have to cry. Like, I don't want to cry about baseball, but I might have to cry.
Tom Hanks says there isn't any, so you'll have to find a different thing.
Isn't there a lot of like deals with the devil that happened up in San Francisco? I've heard a lot about that. I'm sure there's something to this.
Yeah, there was a crossroads supernatural scenario. There was a crossroads scenario, and Evan Longoria gave his soul to the devil. And now it's 2006 for him. I mean,
you look around Buster Posey's forearms, you'll see some open veins, and that's because he has squeezed some blood into the pentagram. That's what happens in San Francisco. Everybody knows that.
He's injecting tiger. What is it? Spider tack?
Tiger.
Injecting it. They were like, you can't do that. He's like, watch me.
The thing about the Giants too is they're not like losing to like good team. They're beating good teams. It's very strange. It's very strange to me. I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah. Without Bochy.
And I think reality will come back a little bit for them. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, here's the thing. You know, the Padres are on pace for a 92-win season, and Padres fandom is up in arms about it, you know. if anything tells you how things have shifted, I guess that's it, right?
Let's look at the fissures that are developing within the fan base.
What a term. No, that was –
I use the fissures a lot.
You used to drive a lot. You know all about fissures.
what do you think? It seems like people are going to eventually just come for Tingler. That's happening, right?
It started.
Lineup construction, lineup, you know, irregularities. I don't know. What are you seeing, David, with the way people are reacting to his management style? I don't see what he's doing that's that different.
No, I mean, look, every club's fan base thinks their manager makes bad bullpen decisions. Oh my God, why doesn't he set a lineup? There is no team in Major League Baseball that rolls the same lineup out 3 days in a row, much less 160 times in a season. And fan bases are going to complain about it because, you know, that's what they do. And, you know, I think anybody who goes into a job with a Major League Baseball club who is going to be bothered by what the Twitter followers of their organization thinks is going to be really short-lived in the job. So,
yeah, I feel like everybody's divided on Hosmer. People are starting, you know, it was like everybody wanted Pham gone a week ago, and now everybody's cool with Pham again, but then some people still want him gone. Nobody likes Tingler. Everybody's confused on what to do about Paddock. I just don't think that the fan base knows what to do with a good team. So it's like, we have to complain about something, and I'm all for it. Listen, I don't know. Like, I feel like I tweeted this the other day and absolutely nobody cared. Which was fun, but I feel like I will repeat it on a podcast in which almost no one will care as well. But I feel like the season is shaping out to be kind of like a 1997 scenario where like the pieces are there, but we just can't get the whole team on the field at the same time. I think it was like somebody put the stat out the other day. That was like six or seven times that the lineup that we wanted to have has been on the field together because everybody keeps getting hurt. And so it just strikes me like 97 was marred by injuries. That was supposed to be the year. And then finally 98, it came together and, you know, we went to the series. And that just started to remind me of that year where it's like, nobody can get on the field at the same time. You know, somebody's always hurt. Somebody's always dealing with something. It just, you know, it's lining up to feel like a very frustrating season, albeit like you said, David, a 92 win season possibly, which is fantastic, but it's still feeling like it's a frustrating season. And I don't like that. It's really bothering me. I just want to be happy.
Choice, Dallas.
It's a choice. My family's not going to provide that for me. I need the San Diego Padres to provide that happiness.
Yeah. Well, David, you know, there's a few players that you've covered while they were in the minors that they're on the team now. The two pitchers that I'm really interested in your evaluation so far is Ryan Weathers and Chris Paddock. I mean, what have you seen from Ryan Weathers so far and the way the team is actually using him and kind of growing his pitch count as it goes along?
Yeah. And I think, you know, they are definitely at the point where they've got to worry about what's the best way to win at the big league level and not what's ideal for developing him. Right. And so, you know, they just announced they're going back to the 5-man rotation. He'll be back in the bullpen for a while here. You know, they're going into Colorado. So that may be short lived. You know, I think what we've seen from him is, you know, after his draft year, he came out, his velocity wasn't able to hold his velocity. But we saw flashes of it. And then, you know, that 2019 season, you know, he missed a month and a half. He came back there and wasn't quite the same. But everybody was really clear last spring when he was in camp, you know, here he is. He's backups where he's sitting sort of 93, 94, 95. And he's carried it over. And, you know, it's a lot easier to give yourself some room to work with when you're sitting 94 than it is 91. And he's taken advantage of it. And, you know, I mean, obviously he's grown up around the game. He's got all of the instincts piece of it. He's got, you know, game knowledge and, you know, I think is, you know, do I think he's a future front of the rotation guy? You know, probably at peak, he'll have a year or two where he's, mm-hmm. you know, legitimately towards the front of the rotation, but you know, he has a lot going for him and has a lot going for him really young. So, you know, I think we saw ups and downs, you know, after that draft year and in 2019 and, you know, said he's going to have to prove it. And he has. So, you know, you see that, you know, Paddock is, you know, it's a really fascinating thing. You know, they're for a lot of guys, one of the things that I always think is interesting at the lowest levels of the minors is, you know, you got these guys who show up who, you know, largely since they were 7 years old, were the best guy on the field wherever they went. And you know, they wind up where all of a sudden, oh God, everybody else is at least this good, right? And yeah. how they yeah. react to being, you know, hit the first time or as a batter, you know, flailing for a week and a half is a real human piece of it. And you know, in the case of Chris Paddock, it happened at the big league level. You know, he's a guy who, you know, and when it's on, the fastball changeup combo's really spectacular, but you know, there aren't a whole lot of starters with the two pitch arsenal, and he's still eventually going to have to figure out some way to tunnel pitches off of the high fastball. And, you know, so what you're seeing is when he's on, you know, today's game, he, you know, that fastball was running, had really nice life on it. He was able to pinpoint it to both the top corner and the bottom corner of the strike zone. And then you've seen some other games where it wasn't there. And if you're a two pitch pitcher and one of your pitches isn't there,
yeah,
that's not a recipe for success in the big leagues. But you know, it is definitely interesting to watch him sort of come back and get out of, you know, like I said, if you're in with a big league organization and paying a lot of attention to what folks on Twitter have to say, it's a tough way to make a life. And I think he and his brother have probably learned that.
Well, like a guy like that with a profile like that, how does somebody go about adding a third pitch when they're at this stage of their career? I mean, obviously there's the off season, there's spring training, but when the lights are on and it's real, they go back to what they know, right? Like I don't know how is there a certain age or no turning back point where you kind of are who you are. I mean, how do you develop a third pitch at this level, especially yeah. when your team is relevant and they can't just, you know, see the last 10 years of Padres baseball. Yeah. You could work on a third pitch maybe on those teams, but yeah. this team is supposed to be for real. How does he go about doing that?
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's that varies from pitcher to pitcher, right? I mean, Yu Darvish and his, you know, 13 different pitches or whatever, you know, whatever story he's telling that day for how many different pitches he has, right? You know, who like literally threw one of his breaking balls in the bullpen a couple of times one Tuesday and like in the middle of a game threw it. And everybody went, wait, he doesn't have that pitch, right? But that's not typical. You know, I think the challenge for Paddock is the ability to really spin a baseball is, you know, it is learnable, but not as learnable, right? I mean, it's one thing to go from, hey, throws a slider, let's see if we can work with him to turn it into a curveball and change the shape of it. You know, he generally has had trouble spinning it, right? And, you know, sometimes you see a really solid curveball, But it, you know, you can see it out of his hand. And so even when it's a good pitch, just, you know, fundamentally, it's often easy for the batters to lay off. And so, you know, I think for him, it probably winds up being more, you know, now that he's got his feel back on his primary fastball, maybe he tries cutting it a little bit. Maybe, you know, maybe you mess around with things. But I mean, that is the challenge, is how do you not fall into the habits of what's worked when it's the thing that got you to the majors and suited and booted at, you know, 23 years old, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I always think about like Ben Simmons in basketball, and like in the off season, they're always like, he's shooting threes. Isn't that great? And then like when he gets into the second round of the playoffs, it's like, I'm not touching the ball. I'm not going to shoot it. I totally understand how these guys can revert back to what, you know, like you said, just what got them there. And like, especially when your team is in the mix, like how do you develop something? And yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one. I wonder how it shakes up out for him. He looked good today though. You know, That was cool. He's looked good in the last few starts, I think. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the changeup is a stellar pitch. And when when he's got the feel of the fastball, those two pair pretty well, but it really, the margin for error is what we've seen, right? When he's on, he's really strong. And when he's not on, it's a bad day on Padres Twitter.
Well, what, one guy, I don't know, you guys might've heard of this guy. His name's Fernando Tatis Jr. He's good, right?
Vaguely remember him. Yeah.
He's got some tools.
He's all right.
Obviously he's having a great season. MLB is marketing him the hell out of him. And it's this Fernando Tatis, you know, everybody on a national level's awakening to what this guy is. When you were covering him in the system, what was the conversation about his defense? Like, I mean, his defense has obviously some refining to be done there. I mean, was this always part of the conversation? Like he has to just kind of play more within his game, or what were the ideas that you guys were talking about then?
Yeah. Well, and so the first time I saw him was in the AZL, you know, a month after the trade. And you know, he was a 17-year-old kid who, you know, the question for a long time, the question was he going to outgrow the position and have to move to third base? It was never, oh God, he doesn't have the ability to stay there. It was purely about, you know, at 17, you looked at that body type and it was like, you know, he may wind up 6'5", 240 pounds. Right. And at that point, probably he's not the shortstop of the future, but you know, that's purely about physical projection. And I think that was one of the things that a lot of the fan base sort of heard, oh, he might have to move to third base. Oh, that must be a question about his defense. And that really wasn't what it was. It's in the very brief time he moved up through the system, right?
Yeah.
It was, you know, you're watching a guy who at 18 looks the way he did, and the number of potential outcomes for what he'd look like at 22 or 25 or 28 was pretty significant, right? And the freakish athleticism is just unreal and was obvious at 17. I mean, in a badly lit backfield at the Peoria Sports Complex, he ran down a ball on the third baseline that, like, off the bat, it was like, oh, well, okay, that's a foul ball strike. And like, was he running for it? And then it was like, oh my God, he's going to catch that. And he did easily. Right. And so that, you know, when you have that sort of ability, you get all the opportunity in the world to continue to develop it. And, you know, you've seen him sort of come back to some of the fundamentals of throws recently. You know, how many of those errors would be errors with a different first baseman? That's a question to stoke the fan debate, but you know, he's clearly got to make those throws more consistently.
the fans definitely debate that on a daily basis.
Well, yeah, we can go there. I think we can talk. I mean, we can talk about the Hosmer conversation, you know, in relation to, like, do you think that the team should try to get rid of him and package some prospects to get rid of him?
I mean, yeah. The day he signed the contract, it was a foregone conclusion. He's here until it's close enough to the end of the contract that you swallow the money and release him. And I mean, I think, you know, that's what's going to wind up happening at some point in year seven is my best guess. But
yeah,
but no, he's here.
Yeah. I mean, he's not, who would you ship him to? Like, he'd have to go to some DH team, I imagine. Like, nobody's
going to. Why would you take his offense as
yeah, who wants a bunch of double play balls?
And no, what I say?
I'm saying who, that's my whole point. Like, where do you ship Eric Hosmer? Yeah. You know, like, you're not going to get much for him, and then it's just kind of a worthless move.
He's with the organization until they're ready to release him, and then he'll go hit 10 homers and 80 at-bats for the Dodgers, and everybody will be beside themselves.
It'll be in the playoffs.
Yeah, and his defense is so inconsistent, and maybe that's the wrong word, but it seems like he's making these.
The word you're looking for is bad.
Right. Yeah. And like, he made this amazing, at least it looked amazing, like leaping grab over his head yesterday, maybe. And then today there was like a ground ball and he like right to his side, and he just let it go by him. And some of the throws to first, it's like, you're swiping at a ball that you're clearly not going to get. So come off the bag and just stop it from going into the dugout. I mean, I don't know. It's just, I feel like he's not a heads up first baseman at all.
I feel like there was that one, I brought this up like a couple, maybe like a month ago or something on the podcast where they're, I should have looked it up. God damn it. I think it was Alex Gonzalez or something like that, who was played shortstop for the Red Sox for a little while after they traded Nomar. And he was talking about Derek Jeter, how everybody would always talk about Jeter and they would never talk about him. And he said, well, I mean, I'd look really good too if I just stayed in the same spot for everybody. For every play, which I feel like Eric Hosmer does, and it's the wrong thing to do. I feel like he's just always in the same spot no matter where the ball is thrown. It's like, this is your place to throw. Like, he has a strike zone for his glove, and that's where you got to get it, or it's not going to happen. It's really frustrating. And that's what I feel like he was kind of the catapult for the turning point of this team starting to play bad baseball the last couple of weeks when he had that throw to home. And he booted it, like tossed it in the air and booted the play. And then it was from there on, it almost seemed like the team just, that was the same game where Fame ran into Kim and all hell broke loose. It was crazy.
Well, you know, I mean, like, obviously, like, the best third baseman we have or first baseman we have is Jake Cronenworth. And like,
yes.
David, I mean, do you see across like the minor league systems in Major League Baseball, do you see like a reimagining of what a first baseman should look like? I mean, it seems like teams are kind of going away from, he has to be a lumbering power hitter all the time. And it's like, maybe you just have another great athlete over there. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, certainly the Padres organizationally have not prioritized developing prototype first baseman, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the one that they really had in the organization was Josh Naylor, and they moved into the outfield. Right? But
that was a fun summer. That was a fun summer.
More than one summer, because he was doing it out in San Antonio and minors before he was doing it in the big leagues. And I mean, more power to him. But yeah, that was definitely an adventure. But if you look at the Padres system right now, there's not a significant prospect who's that, like, you know, 6'4", right, you know, going to hit 30 homers.
Just like Kyle Blanks. Just say Kyle Blanks.
way short of on both the height and weight. But
but that prototype of like, well, you have to have a big first baseman who hits 40 bombs. Like, I don't know if that's what teams are really looking at anymore.
Yeah, and I, you know, certainly if you look around the league, there are plenty of those guys, but it's not a piece that Padres player development has focused on. They, right now, you've got, you know, at Triple A, you've got a whole group of guys who are sort of, you know, utility players who are rotating through the position. You know, Patrick Kivlahan's played a fair amount. Taniello, who's minor league free agent signee, who's a corner guy. Double A, you've got sort of a parade of guys rotating through that position. They've just signed a minor league free agent to add to the rotation depth at first base and in high A. But yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, around the system, like, you know, we know that the big guys are that are coming up. We have, you know, Mackenzie Gore and CJ Abrams, and I guess Hassel's doing some stuff at Elsinore. You know, I love always asking you this question. Like, you know, if I'm at the Padres Twitter, Padres podcast bar, you know, and I'm hanging out, maybe I'm ignoring John Gennaro or something, but
not hard to do.
Good. Just like, hey, John, go over. Okay. Let's just not do this.
Hey, John, Craig's over there. He wants to talk about TV. You don't have to talk to him again the rest of the night.
Let's say I'm talking to somebody who, and I want to impress them with a prospect that nobody's talking about. Who's that prospect that I should have now before everybody gets onto them?
Yeah. And so really, if you look at the first now 7 weeks of the minor league season, there are three guys who didn't receive a vote from any of us in our top 30 preseason rankings. And some of the guys did their rankings when there were 10 other guys who were in the organization who've been traded subsequently. So it may be a little bit unfair to say, hey, they didn't get any votes, but the three guys who didn't appear in any of our lists, who, you know, certainly are doing things this year. One is a corner outfielder at Double-A, Jack Sawinski, who's a kid who the Padres drafted out of high school in the Chicago area, who, you know, has always shown raw power, but has had trouble carrying it into the games. You know, he's now playing in San Antonio, which is a notoriously difficult place for a left-handed power hitter to hit. And he's tied for the lead in the, let's see if I can say this right, Double-A Central League. Thank you to Rob Manfred for his commitment to honoring the legacy of the game, because that certainly rolls off the tongue better than the Texas League.
We'll get to him in a minute, but
I'll need more than a minute. But yeah, so Sawinski now has 10 homers and OPS over 1,000. You know, he's always had a fair amount of swing and miss in his game. He's right around his career strikeout rate, but what he's doing is staying in the zone better. So he's one guy who has clearly asserted himself as a prospect, you know, in the upper minors, making a difference on a pretty regular basis in an organization that doesn't have a huge amount of outfield depth. So that's a huge thing for him. Mm-hmm. Second guy, and really the other two guys are at high A, which is now Fort Wayne. You know, the league's juggled. And so it used to be that Fort Wayne was a level below Lake Elsinore, and now those two have flipped. And so at Fort Wayne, you've got Johnny Hamza, who is primarily a catcher, but has some versatility. He's played all over the field. He was a pick out of high school in Alaska. He was the two-time Gatorade Player of the Year in Alaska. If you can name another one, I'd be impressed. I certainly can't, but has really been, you know, he's a guy that they drafted. He hadn't been a catcher. They announced they were going to convert him. You know, learning to catch at the professional level is a lot to ask of a kid. He's really done a lot. And right now he's leading the Tin Caps. You know, his on-base percentage is north of 400. He's taken really good at-bats. He's providing pretty solid defense. You know, I think probably long-term, he's a guy who, especially as big league rosters are capped on the number of pitchers they can have, starting again next year, you know, he's a guy who provides some versatility as a third catcher on the roster, which has a lot of value. The other guy out there who I don't think is on radar as much is Agustin Ruiz. You know, he sort of demographically looks pretty similar to Tirso Ornelas, left-handed swinging, right-handed throwing outfielder from Mexico, who's part of that 2016 class. Another guy who has had some pretty significant swing and miss issues in his career, but as he grew into his body, you knew there was power there. He's now, he's got 9 homers on the year, which I think is more than half the total of the team. and is definitely asserting himself as somebody to watch in going forward. So those are a couple guys to think about who are already out at affiliates that are playing.
He's on the Tin Caps, Tirso. Yeah. Is that, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Both Tirso and Agustin Ruiz are out there with the Tin Caps this year.
Yeah.
So which one of those guys are we going to trade instead of Eric Hosmer? Which
with Eric Hosmer, we're going to package them. We're going to package them once they get, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, Nick.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, sticking with the Tin Caps, you know, somebody who had a start today, somebody that I will always have my eye on is Anderson Espinoza. You know, it's just a...
Hold on. Shh.
Do we have a drop for that?
No, we don't have a drop. We just have to be quiet just in case he heard it, got scared. Something happened to his arm when he got scared. We just have to be quiet.
Yeah.
Can't say his name too loudly. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, he you know, it's personal for me because... we got him from the Red Sox, and Red Sox Twitter lost their shit when he got traded because his comp was like Pedro, and they all got really upset about that trade. So I had some fun texts with some family members, but anyways, you know, he's had a rough road. He's had, you know, 2 Tommy John surgeries. We know the story, but it's what have you heard about, you know, like his 2021 season? I mean, it's, What's it look like for him? I mean, it's such a, you know, crazy story that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're looking for an example to say, oh, this is how this works out, there isn't one, right? Uh-huh. You know, he was so young when he came over. You know, he was barely 17 when he was pitching in the complex for the Red Sox. He, you know, he was in full season ball at 18. You know, you go back and you really do wonder about the what if, right? He worked his way through spring training, was supposed to be the opening day starter in Elsinore in what was that, 2017. You know, somewhere between they broke camp in Phoenix and they showed up in Elsinore, it was like, we're gonna rest him for a week. And it took a long time before he had the first surgery. He worked his way back. You know, we saw him working out in the backfields in 2018, 2019 in spring training. You know, I happened to be out there when he made his start in against the White Sox over at Camelback. And I mean, I've never seen something so dispiriting as, you know, he had thrown, it was the first inning and he threw a pitch and it just wasn't there. And like you started seeing a bunch of heads turning and trying to make eye contact with each other. And he stood there for a second and then the pitching coordinator went out to get him. And I've never felt worse for a player on a baseball field than him walking off that day. I will say personally, he's such a nice kid and has been, you know, and he came pretty damn close to walking away. And I'm so impressed at the way he's continued to work. You know, what this season looks like, and right now he's just got to throw, right? I mean, you know,
just get a whole season in competitive ball
and get innings in
crowds. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, both today and his last outing, you know, first couple of innings, today he struggled more than he did last week. But you know, the third inning, it was interesting. You know, now that the minor leagues are playing these 6-game series, he's now faced the same team twice. And today was the first time he'd worked on just a standard 4 days rest. And you know, earlier in the week, third inning, he looked kind of gassed in the third inning. Today, he didn't have his best stuff. And sort of again, in the third inning, it was like, you could almost wonder if he was looking to see if they were coming to get him at some point in the third inning. You know, he's going to have to figure out a way to get above 50 pitches here, but you know, that's his job.
The velocity is just,
I mean, he's sitting pretty consistently at 95. And you know, the phrase easy 95, you know, he's barely 6 feet. It doesn't really look like he's working, and he's at 95 pretty easily. So, you know, does he make it as a starter? I don't know. You know,
that's what I was just
he's on the 40 man.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Like, is this something that we wind up, you know, he winds up a late inning relief guy, you know, with that fastball and all the tools he's always had? Like, would that be a safer bet for him in the long run?
I mean, is that the more likely outcome? Sure. But, you know, you gotta give it a chance to see if it can come together for him. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, I totally, totally understand that. And I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but he's 47 years old now. And after two Tommy Johns, you're like, did we give it a shot? Maybe your body's not built for that kind of workload. Like, you know, you just really, you have to look at it that from that point of view at some point.
But again, I mean, for right now, what he really needs is just to get as much work in as he can, right?
Sure,
so,
sure.
So you want to work him as a starter and see where it goes. And the part that's crazy is that for all of this, he's 21.
Yeah.
He's only 21. I would have never guessed that in a million years.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Let's get to the bigs, Anderson.
Yeah. Well, you know, you see like a guy like Lamet who, you know, is, you know, he's staring down, you know, or he was at that scare we had earlier this season where, you know, once you get to two Tommy Johns, it's like, there's just a ceiling for how much money you're going to make doing this. Right. I mean, like that's always going to be on your resume that's I didn't realize you were actually there. The second one.
Yeah,
wow. God. Mm. Yeah. Well, you know, the other player that, you know, had an interesting weekend, Dallas, this is in your neck of the woods. I mean, are you ready for a Robert Hassel III mania? Cause I am.
Are you kidding me, dude?
Are you going to be at the forefront of the mania? Are you going to be like,
RH3? Are you talking about RH3? Yeah. We've already got billboards up here. We're ready to go, man. I mean, they're going to melt and they're going to melt this month, but we got the billboards going.
Well, so David, like a guy like this, who's, you know, he's performing at Elsinore like this. I mean, could we see him jump before the end of the minor league season, or what do you think the plan is?
Yeah. And I would be, He's clearly a guy that you want to move, right? As he's able to, as he shows that he's checking things off of his development list, you want to move him. You know, a lot of what the sort of standard approach to what do you do to develop a guy, you know, last year blew it all up, right? So, you know, for and there were definitely players who were significantly negatively impacted by not having the season, you know. But the flip side is you've got a guy like him who was drafted and spent the better part of the summer facing a whole bunch of pitching who are in the big leagues right now. Right. I mean, and the trade-off of that for a guy like him was pretty significant. Right. And so, yeah, so he's off to a pretty torrid start. You know, he's one of the younger guys in the position players in the league. His OPS is, I think, back over 900 after today. You know, you're seeing a guy who can play legitimate center field. He's, I think, 12 of 13 on stolen base attempts. He's hitting for power. He's making solid contact. You know, that's what you want to see, right? And where they have really focused with high school position players the last couple of years with him, with Abrams, with Edwards before him, really, with Xavier Edwards, right? They are prioritizing guys whose hit tool in high school is at the elite level, and they figure that the weight program and the athletic program they've got them on, they'll grow into power. And it's a lot easier to grow a guy into power than it is to teach him to hit at 97 mile an hour running fastball, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Well, that's the story with CJ Abrams, right? I mean, he's growing, he's bigger than they thought he was going to be, right? Isn't that the, like, he kind of bulked up more than...
Yeah, I mean, he always had a bigger frame. You know, it was interesting. I think he and Xavier Edwards got sort of lumped in together in a lot of circles, but they're really different physical body types. And, you know, Abrams was always the guy that was like, you know, he could add 20 pounds of muscle to that frame really easily. And he started to. And yeah, and when you talk about who are the guys that this organization needs to convert, right? It, those two guys, position wise, Mackenzie Gore pitching, you know, if those three come through, the rest of it is noise, right? mm-hmm. You know, if you can get CJ Abrams to what he could be, which is an all-star level leadoff batter who gives you some pop, that's what you need.
What do you think the organization is angling him towards? Is it a second baseman or a kind of a hybrid fourth outfielder, but like an outfield option and also a middle infielder? Is that
so he has yet to actually play any outfield in the organization.
Okay.
He's playing primarily shortstop at Double A. He made the start at second base today. I think it was his fourth start of the year at Double A, at second base. You know, it one of the hallmarks of AJ Preller's tenure is that he'll let the positional stuff sort of figure itself out, right? In 2015, he went out and acquired 17 right fielders all at once, right?
Yeah,
you know, and
famously the AJ Preller 17.
Yeah, exactly. yeah. You know, I think when you look at who Abrams is, you know, his arm is, I think, probably most evaluators probably would put a half grade higher on it than they had coming out of the draft. But he is fine at shortstop. It's probably not ideal. You know, when you look at the player he is, the positions that player profile fits best are second base and center field. But yeah, I don't think they're at all concerned about, they're going to let him play the max, you know, the most valuable position on the field. Keep options open. And, you know, if he has the year that he's started to have, you know, and he's at, whether he stays at Double A the whole year, keeping in mind he's the youngest player in the league, you know, he can, if they want to get him looks at center field, he'll go out to the Arizona Fall League this year and do that for a month and see how it works. But they'll keep, they'll let that solve itself, I think.
Yeah. I mean, do you think, like, a guy like that, does he jump to AAA or I can never get a feel for this organization. Like, they sometimes just skip AAA altogether for some guys. And he seems like he's on that tier of player where they could just send him straight up. But that doesn't seem like that's going to happen this year.
I mean, you know,
unless something happens, I don't know.
It would be surprising to me, with the caveat that if in September what you need is you know, somebody who gives you some more infield positional versatility and, you know, top of the scale speed.
Yeah.
You know, you might add him in September. You know, the rosters are going to look different in September this year than they have in the past, but that might be a thing. Hmm. They talk all the time, and there are a lot of things that you hear that it's like, oh, that's just a talking point. One of the things they say that I think they legitimately believe is each guy is his own guy, and how that player is performing is going to give them the answer to what does he need next, right? And sometimes you see a guy who needs an extra year sitting at a lower level to put it together, and sometimes you need a guy to be pushed to take the next step. And you know, for as much as analytics drive the game as a whole, the Padres front office remains one of the places where there's a real balance between scouting and stats, and they take both really seriously.
Yeah. Well, you know, it seems like, you know, for a long time, the crown jewel of the system has been Mackenzie Gore. And, you know, he's still young, and I guess he's, you know, he's struggling with command. What do you think how do you think the rest of 2021 plays out for him? Does he basically just stay at AAA and work the kinks out, or I think he's up?
They're going to need him to be able to step up at some point. You know, so he missed 2 weeks with blisters, which was an issue he dealt with in 2018 pretty significantly. He came back yesterday, pitched 2 innings, looked, and just eyeballing off of really crappy video from AA, looked to be a little bit more free and relaxed on the mound than he has been. You know, I think on a list of guys who were negatively impacted by not having the competitive season last year, he's clearly in that group. I think there were a couple of minor things that they were looking to get him to make changes with. I think, and again, all of this is you know, with the caveat that access to anybody at the alternate site last year was almost impossible, and the organization is barely willing to confirm or deny whether somebody's still alive, much less.
I feel like I know more about UFOs than I do about what happened at the alternate site at UCSD last year. I don't.
Maybe we should ask Tom DeLong and see if he's got the.
I'm trying. I'm working on it, David. I mean, I really want to. That's like a dream guest, Tom DeLong. Let's skip baseball. Let's just get into aliens talk. Yeah,
carry on.
But I hope there's a book about the alt site. There should be the book. Like,
well, and you know, so I think that from little pieces that I've been able to piece together, you know, there were some minor things that they were trying to get him to change mechanically. It didn't happen immediately, and he was. Everybody and their brother was watching, and everybody and their brother had opinions, and everybody and their brother was well, let's use this cue instead of that cue. I think had he been dealing with those in bullpen sessions between starts every 5 days, it would have probably been better. You know, it has not been a good start to the year for him. I do think yesterday, you know, hopefully it is certainly something he's going to try and build from, right? And just get out of your head and just pitch and do what works, what's worked for you. I think, you know, we've seen he's dropped down some of the national rankings pretty significantly. There's a piece of me that, you know, you look north to the, if you ignore the whole domestic abuser thing, the trajectory that Julio Urias has taken for the Dodgers, right? Who was super young, super talented lefty, you know, at the top of the prospect list. And it took him a few years, right? And for him, some of it was injury, but, you know, I still think the future for Gore is top of the rotation starter. I think that's still very much where he is.
Good. Well, I feel better about it. Thank you. Yeah.
I think he is. I think we all can agree he is.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, before we get out of here, I would like to open the floor to what does everybody think about the new policy for MLB and banning like Stick'em, Tiger or Spider Tack.
Yeah,
like Spider Grip. Yeah. I mean, following the minor league system like you do, like, is this just a weird story that, you know, seems that it's another example of MLB being late to it and having like a weird reaction to it? Or what's your take on how this is all going to play out?
Yeah, I mean, I think the trajectory over the last few years of all of the technology that lets guys really, you know, dissect how much spin they're getting on a particular pitch. And if I make this change, then I get this. And if I make that change, I get this. And if I go from having sunscreen on my glove side forearm that I go to every now and then to I use, you know, spider tack, which can freaking hold a 10 pound cinder block if I just hold my arm out straight, right? Oh, look, I've got an extra 250 RPM on my fastball. Okay, I'm going to do that. And to make it about individual players is absolutely bullshit and exactly what MLB seems committed to doing.
Right.
Which you know, it's the way they've approached.
It's their playbook.
Right, right. I mean, it is certainly the way they've approached things in general. It is clearly at the point that it's not tenable to keep pretending that all these guys who suddenly added, you know, 12 inches of vertical movement can just keep doing that and keep finding the next scientific advancement to make it 14 instead of 12, right? I mean, yeah. So it is time to clean it up. I think we will. It will rebalance both the way you look at player development and hopefully bring a little bit more balance to the game to watch.
But are there conversations like with minor league evaluators saying like this is a stick'em, this is a spider tack guy or whatever you call it. I can't remember.
Spider tack. Yeah.
But like, are there like, are guys being labeled as, oh, that he's a, he, that's all like fake spin rate, but
I'm sure that is happening. It's been a really tough year to actually hear what people are saying firsthand. You know, we've had fewer conversations
right.
with yeah. people in the game in the last 14 months than ever in doing this. So, you know, I don't have a really good read on where the industry is as a whole on it, but you know, I think if you watch video of certain guys, you're like, did he yeah. really figure something magical out? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I just trust that Bob Manfred's going to just make a mess of it in some way. I mean, that we know, I think. Yeah. It's a weird one. It's a tough one because, I don't know, we talked about this last week a little bit, Travis, but like, you know, that, Do you guys generally feel like the game is harder to watch now with pitching being so much more advanced than hitting, if that's true?
I'm the only thing I'm frustrated with is the umpire calling. I think so much. I've seen so many at bats this year where the bat was taken out of the batter's hands because the umpire is way off the plate. I like low scoring games. I like watching pitching. And I think that substances that pitchers try to get on the field has been part of the game since the game was conceived. I mean, it just seems like, you know, the most accurate documentary of a baseball season ever, Major League, that was, you know, a fundamental part of the movie. I think we all in a way go like, we probably know what's happening, and if they can get away with it, go for it. That's always how I've been with these kind of things in sports. But
yeah, but what's shifted is from sort of the individual guy just, you know, sort of screwing around to see substance. And the science side of it and the organization, the institutional focus on it.
Right.
You know, yeah. Where, you know, if.
Or is it Barbasol and Vaseline and a little Crisco, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And I actually don't really understand how they're going to implement it. Like they're just, how are they going to, are
probably poorly and chaotically if Robert yeah. is in charge of it. So.
No.
Well, the umpires are going to be, are the umpires going to be empowered to stop games and check substances yeah. on the field?
I think they should do it like we used to do in water polo in high school before each game. Because, you know, we were trying to cheat all the time, of course. They'd have you sit on the edge of the pool deck and the ref would come by and you'd have to touch all your fingernails on your toes and on your feet because you're trying to get advantage of that little nail that you can cut the guy with or whatever, pull down their Speedo. So I would love to see before every game, all the players walk out on like third base and first baseline and the umps go by and they check, like pat them down or something. That would be beautiful.
we're almost there, I think.
I mean, the weird part is the hero in this story, to some extent, of all people in the world, is Cowboy Joe West, right? And he's, his decision to go out and actually address it in the middle of the game 3 weeks ago,
yeah,
St. Louis, brought it to a head. And, you know, I mean, God knows, in Joe West telling the story, he will be the hero in all stories. But I'm not sure that this comes to a head the way it has if he didn't do that. So
yeah. All right. Well, hey, David, thanks for coming on again. Yeah. You know, you're a regular. You're about a twice a year clip with the TKF roster, I think.
There you go.
What do you guys have coming up next with Mad Friars? I mean, the trade deadline is a coming. And
the draft is later this year, right? It's July instead of June, so that's coming up here. That's a piece. We've got Conniff was out in Fort Wayne. We've got Kevin and Ben are going to be out there later in the summer. We'll have on site from San Antonio and El Paso coming up. Yeah, it's getting back into the swing of things for us too, right? It has been a really weird year. So we remain incredibly thankful for the folks who continue to subscribe and make it possible for us to get out to the affiliates and keep the website going and all that stuff. And it's nice to just be watching baseball again.
Yes, it is. Yeah. We're ready, I think.
We're ready.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting summer. I think there's so many players around the system that, you know, the next month and a half is going to be pretty important for their trajectory, right? I mean,
so that's how it goes. Especially after a lost year, right?
There's
some guys who they are make or break this year. So, yeah.
Righty. Well, hey, thanks for listening to the Kept Faith podcast. Check out madfriars.com and David J on Twitter. You can check out us at thekeptfaith.com, and we'll be back after Father's Day. We're going to take a week off, but Dallas, do you got anything for the Padres canon coming up? Proud of the Padres canon this week for nominating Brian Lawrence and not getting in. That's funny. That's good.
Incredible. That's really pretty good. Incredible. Yeah. Well, that was a turn of events I did not see happening. To be honest,
H.J. Preller is one for one on his nominees.
He should be one for one in the other direction. Bavakwa should have never got in, but I think people were excited. He was the first guy nominated. But yeah. Brian Lawrence, honestly, he spent a few years here and deserves to be in, but that's okay. It's not, I'm not the boss of it. But yeah, this week is going to be fun as well. We have an old friend alert coming on, and I'm not going to give it away. You'll just have to listen, but it'll be out Wednesday.
Cool.
Very cool.
All righty. Well, we'll see you next time on the Kept Faith. Keep the faith.
All right. Go, bye. Padres.